This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guest this morning is Caleb Scharf, director of the Columbia Astrobiology Center. Caleb writes the Life Unbounded blog for Scientific American, has written for New Scientist, Science, and Nature, among other publications, and is author of the award-winning Extrasolar Planets and Astrobiology. Caleb Scharf is here today to tell us about his book, Gravity's Engines, How Bubble-Blowing Black Holes Rule Galaxies, Stars, and Life in the Universe, published in 2012. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What led you to write your book, Gravity's Engines? What is your purpose?
Well, that's a good question. And I think part of the purpose was to explore one of the more extraordinary stories in science. Science is made of stories at some level. And sometimes those stories are written with algebra, sometimes they're written in data, and sometimes they're just stories, conventional stories. And I think the most interesting ones are the ones that deal with phenomena that are very strange from our point of view. And nature is full of these things. And I felt that black holes really, you know, if you look at the pile of strange stories, they come out pretty close to the top. And there's been a lot of research done in the last 10 to 15 years that hasn't quite made it into the popular consciousness yet. And so I really wanted to tell that story, the ongoing story of the extraordinary life and times of black holes.
Before we talk about black holes specifically, what does our current map of the universe look like overall?
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, we live in a galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy. And that galaxy, for a long time, was what we thought the entire universe was. And it contains about 200 billion stars. And it's actually just one of another 100 to 200 billion galaxies scattered throughout the cosmos. So these are very large numbers. They're very hard to get a grasp on. And when we look around the universe, we see that galaxies aren't just randomly placed throughout space. They're grouped together, galaxies like other galaxies, and it's gravity that does that. So the universe, if you're a human with human vision and you look out at the universe, you kind of look at this mottled picture of galaxies and stars spread across. But it's very distorted by the fact that we live inside a galaxy. And so, you know, the modern cosmos is this interesting mix of what's very close to us in cosmic terms, all the stars and so on in our galaxy, and then all these very, very distant things spread in great mottled patchwork across the sky. And then, of course, it's all full of other stuff. It's full of photons of light that are racing back and forth across eternity. And we can't see those until they hit us, until they hit our eyes, but they're there and they're very dense. There are photons left over from the Big Bang, the photons produced by stars through cosmic time. So, you know, if I really had to summarize what I felt the cosmos looked like, what our picture of the universe looked like right now, it's this big soupy mess of stuff. And that's really where we're at. But it's remarkable we've been able to construct even this picture of the cosmos.
Now let's speak about black holes. What are the key elements of black holes? What do we know about their characteristics?
Well, black holes are really interesting. You know, a black hole is really the result of matter becoming incredibly densely packed, incredibly compressed and shrunk down to the point where that mass exerts a tremendous stress on space and time around it. And this is something that Einstein realized, or people realized once Einstein had developed his theory of general relativity that incorporates gravity into his theory of relativity. And he kind of overturned the picture of what we think gravity is. He said that gravity is not a force exactly. It's a consequence of mass distorting space itself and time. So the analogy people use is a sort of rubber sheet. And you put something in the rubber sheet and it bends everything down. And that's just two dimensions. Space is three dimensions. So as a consequence of Einstein's theory, people began to see that there might be situations where matter becomes so compressed, so dense, that it sort of folds space around itself. It creates a region around itself from which even light can't escape. And that's what we now think of as black holes. And this region is defined by a zone that starts with the event horizon. For a simple black hole, that's kind of a spherical region of space that looks black. at least if nothing is falling into it. And from within that region, no light can escape, not because it's getting slowed down, but because it's getting stretched out, because space itself is being stretched out by the black hole. So the interesting thing about black holes is they were an intellectual conception long before we had evidence that they really existed. And now we know that they do exist, and they exist in a wide variety of sizes. And particularly interesting is that there are black holes that are millions to billions to even tens of billions of times the mass of our sun in the center of every galaxy in the universe.
How are black holes detected? How do we know they exist?
Well, it's a really great question. For a long time, this was very controversial. People saw evidence of things that they thought might be black holes but couldn't convince themselves. So there are really two ways you can do it. One is by looking at their gravitational influence. And certainly we've done this in the center of our galaxy. We can actually watch the motion of stars very close to the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and we see that they're moving around something that we have a hard time spotting. And they're moving around extremely fast. And that tells us that whatever's at the middle is enormously massive and occupies a very small volume, which fits the bill for a black hole. In this case, it's about 4 million times the mass of our sun. Now, in other places, the way we see black holes is because as stuff falls into them, before it reaches the event horizon, it gets torn apart, it gets accelerated, and it produces enormous amounts of energy. It's like, you know, heating up a furnace, basically. And the energy pours out as light, it pours out as subatomic particles. And there's only a few kinds of objects in the universe that can do this, and black holes do it better than anyone else, and so that's how we spot them.
Would you say more about what causes the formation of a black hole?
Right, so broadly speaking, right now, there are two types of black hole that we think are out there. There are sort of small ones, and small means maybe 10 times the mass of our sun, so pretty big by human standards. But those are formed when big old stars use up their nuclear fuel, and the energy production gets switched off, and gravity takes over, and it collapses and makes these relatively small black holes. Now, the big, massive ones out there, you know, they're a bit of a mystery. And they're a bit of a mystery because some of them are 10 billion times the mass of our sun. So how did they grow to be so big? Now, obviously, black holes eat stuff. If stuff falls in, it can't escape. If light can't escape, nothing else can escape. So one way you can make these big black holes is you start with a small one and you let it eat. And as it eats, it grows bigger and bigger. But we found that even that may not be sufficient to make these really big ones. There has to be something else going on. And we think it's possible that they had very large, very massive seed structures in the early universe. Something happened that was different in the early universe that could begin to make these big black holes instead of making them in stars. The other possibility is they eat each other. Big black holes can merge together and make an even bigger black hole. And so those are the routes by which we think these objects are made.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Caleb Scharf, author of the book Gravity's Engines, How Bubble-Blowing Black Holes Rule Galaxies, Stars, and Life in the Universe. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How do black holes affect the creation of stars and galaxies?
Well, so this is something that we hadn't really appreciated until quite recently, until the last 10 or 15 years. The way that black holes, in particular these supermassive black holes that lurk in the middle of all galaxies, affect stars and the nature of the galaxy around them is because of the energy they produce when stuff falls in. So this is energy produced before stuff reaches the event horizon. Once it's hit the event horizon, it's gone for good. But on the way, and the analogy I use is water going down the plug hole in the bathtub, it gurgles. And that gurgling is sound waves in our bathtub produced by the motion of the water. Now, out in the universe, stuff falling into a gravity well of a black hole does kind of the same thing, but the energy comes out as light and subatomic particles and so on. Now, that energy escapes. Sometimes it squirts out in jets that span tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands of light years, and it washes across the material in a galaxy or even the material outside of the galaxy into galactic gas. And it puts energy into that material, and it warms it up. And it turns out that you kind of need to cool stuff down to make stars. So if you then go and warm stuff up, it's very hard for intergalactic gas and dust to condense out into new stars. So the energy of black holes kind of regulates the production of stars. It puts a stop to too much star growth in galaxies.
In what ways may black holes have affected the conditions necessary for life to emerge in the universe?
This is kind of a bit of a bold thing to say, and I wouldn't take it too far, but it's true that if you look at the chain of events necessary to produce things like us, complex organisms like us, we're really chemistry. And chemistry comes from molecules, and molecules are made with all sorts of elements, including elements that didn't exist when the universe began. And these are heavier elements, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and so on. They're all produced deep inside stars by nuclear fusion. Now, because black holes seem to have this intimate relationship with what's going on in galaxies everywhere, in terms of the number of stars and when stars are made and the types of stars, whether they're big or small, it means that black holes have actually influenced the production of elements. They've influenced, therefore, the environments out of which planets form, out of which chemistry takes place, and out of which life comes, at least in one place in the universe that we know of. And so there is a connection. There's a connection because black holes play this cosmic role in regulating stars and the production of elements. So it's not a very direct connection, but if you took black holes away, things would be different. And they might be different enough that stuff like us wouldn't arise.
What is special about the specific place in the cosmos where our planet Earth is located that may have contributed to the possibility of life here?
This is a question that comes up again and again, and we're slowly inching towards a better understanding of whether or not our planet and our solar system is unusual. I mean, this is really what the question comes down to. Is this something special about here? And I think most people now would say there are certain things that are, if not special, maybe they're not quite the usual. In other words, we're not unique necessarily. Our planetary system isn't necessarily unique, but it's somewhat unusual compared to everything else out there. And so there are certain things you need, we think, to make life on a planet. You need a certain number of elements to make those planets, to have the chemistry for life. And you need a sort of calm cosmic environment. So, for example, if we were in a galaxy where there's a black hole eating lots of matter and making enormous amounts of energy, that might be a very hostile environment for life. Where we are in the Milky Way galaxy is a somewhat calm neighborhood. There aren't too many supernova going off. There isn't a big black hole doing too much in our neighborhood. And so it seems that you need this just right mix. So it looks like, we probably do live in a slightly unusual patch in cosmic terms. And it's probably not unusual if you want to have life, but it may be unusual in general.
Would you say more about the Milky Way and how it compares with other galaxies?
So for a long time, we've felt that the Milky Way was just an average sort of galaxy, and this has been the general idea, and with some good reason. But more recently, what we've begun to understand is that the Milky Way is maybe not quite such an average galaxy. It seems to be a galaxy that's in transition. A long time ago, it probably made many more stars per year. So right now, there are about maybe one or two new stars being made every year in the whole Milky Way galaxy. Now, that doesn't sound like very much on a human timescale. On a cosmic timescale, that's not bad. But it's not as much as some places, but it's also more than other galaxies. So we think we may live in a galaxy, and the term that astronomers use is a Green Valley galaxy. It's a place in transition. And that's very interesting because these places in transition, these galaxies in transition, aren't the most common sort of galaxy. But they're also galaxies that seem to have certain things going on. So for example, these galaxies like ours tend to have supermassive black holes that are actually quite busy in terms of eating matter. They may not be producing enormous amounts of energy, but it's happening regularly. And that's a surprise because we hadn't until recently appreciated that might be going on in our galaxy.
How do the characteristics of the black hole in our galaxy affect us?
Well, so we're not sure that they affect us directly. What's very interesting is that in the last few years, people have been studying what happens around the black hole in the center of the Milky Way, and they've seen two things. One, they've seen that on an almost daily basis, it looks like material, perhaps like asteroids, are actually being consumed by the black hole in the center of our galaxy, these little tiny bursts of energy coming out. They're not very much. But we've also seen evidence that sometime in the last 100,000 years, there was a much greater outburst of energy from the black hole. And this is, again, stuff falling in. And before it reaches the event horizon, it produces energy as it gets torn apart. And it seems unlikely that that energy would have directly affected us, but it probably has affected the production of stars towards the center of our galaxy. And it raises a question of, well, what's feeding the black hole? Why is it getting fed? Something's going on. We think that's to do with the ongoing assembly of our galaxy. In fact, the Milky Way is not finished. We live in a sort of fix-up, half-done house, and all the final details aren't in place. And so it's all connected to what's going on with the black hole. And, you know, so our environment is probably not so affected by the energy of the black hole, but it may be affected by the processes that are feeding the black hole in the first place.
What is the predicted future of planet Earth in the cosmos? What will our fate be?
In cosmic terms, it's a little bleak. So there's a sequence of events that we think are in our very, very distant future. So, for example, the first thing that's really going to happen, and certainly for the Earth, is that our sun is gradually getting hotter and brighter as it ages. And this is what happens to all stars when they are fusing hydrogen in their centers. And so maybe in a billion years or so, the Earth may actually be too hot to hold liquid water on its surface. And it's irrespective of what we do to the planet. This is just the star we're around, the sun getting hotter and brighter. If you wait another 4 billion years, maybe 5 billion years, the sun will actually finish off burning hydrogen in its core, fusing hydrogen, and it will inflate. And this is what big stars do. They sort of have a sigh and they let the belt loosen and they flop out into space. And that may actually destroy the Earth altogether. It may not envelop the Earth, but that inflated star will cause the Earth to spiral inwards. And if that weren't enough, around the same time, in 5 billion years time, our nearest big galaxy, Andromeda, is going to come crashing into the Milky Way. We're on a collision course. And that is undoubtedly going to disrupt things immensely. It may not cause anything to actually collide. We may not be hitting other stars, but it will dramatically change our cosmic environment. So the future is mixed and generally bleak.
You are listening to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is Caleb Scharf, author of the book Gravity's Engines: How Bubble-Blowing Black Holes Rule Galaxies, Stars, and Life in the Universe. Would you speak about the bubbles blown by black holes and their effect on the cosmos?
Right. So this is another manifestation of what happens with the energy that gets produced as stuff falls into black holes. In certain circumstances, the energy comes out as streams or jets of matter. And it's a bit like an enormous particle accelerator, like the Large Hadron Collider, but on mega steroids. And this energy pours out, and it's, again, because stuff is being swirled around the black hole and energy is being produced by converting energy of motion into other things. It squirts out into intergalactic space. Now, intergalactic space is not always empty. Sometimes there's gas out there. It's very tenuous, but it's there. So the situation is a bit like taking a straw, putting it in a glass of something and blowing. And that's really what the black hole's doing. And it turns out that it can actually inflate these holes in the intergalactic atmosphere around galaxies. And we can see this. And these holes are bubbles. They're kind of self-contained, and they even float up in these enormous structures across tens of millions of light years. It's really quite extraordinary, but it's the same sort of physics as in your glass of milk or something like that. And these bubbles, as they float up, they actually set in motion sound waves. But these aren't sound waves like we're used to. These are sound waves at an extremely low frequency, in fact, 57 octaves below human hearing sensitivity. But the sound waves produced by these floating bubbles are part of a mechanism to, again, help regulate star formation, because it puts energy into this intergalactic gas. It warms it a little bit. It sort of simmers it, and it slows down the process of that gas turning into new stars. So this seems to happen in about 70% of the structures where there are these black holes and these intergalactic atmospheres. So it's happening all over the place.
You alluded to this a bit earlier, but what would the universe be like without black holes?
Yeah, it's a question a lot of people ask, and it's a really good question. And I think, you know, it's a little tricky physically to do that. You'd have to change some of the laws of physics, but let's suppose we could magically remove all the black holes, or in fact have them never form in the first place. I think what we now understand tells us that we would live in a universe full of many more big galaxies, many more stars. There's a finite number of stars in the universe, in the observable universe, and it's about 10 to the power of 22 stars. It's a very big number, but it is a finite number. Without black holes performing this duty of sort of regulating the production of stars, galaxies would tend to get overweight. And so, you know, one consequence might be that our night skies would be that much brighter. There would be so many more stars and galaxies visible out there. And that would have consequences for the production of elements and planets and so on, which are very hard to anticipate. But the universe almost certainly would look rather different, and it might be a brighter place.
What are the most important unanswered questions about black holes?
Many. So there are two sides to that, I think. There are many unanswered, more theoretical questions. So, for example, the issue of what is really going on inside the event horizon that we can't look into. So, of course, it's like a child. If you tell them, don't look in that box, you really want to look in that box. I mean, we're in that kind of situation. And so an unanswered question is, what happens in the middle? As far as we know, once stuff becomes so compressed that it makes an event horizon, it has no option but to shrink down to essentially nothing. But that doesn't quite make sense. And the problem is that we come to a clash of physical theories. We have general relativity from Einstein, but then we have the quantum world. And we don't yet have a theory that meshes those two things together. And we actually need that to understand what happens in the center of black holes. So that's one big question that we'd really like to know the answer to. The other questions are a little more practical, and they're to do with how matter actually generates all this energy. We have rough ideas, but we can't see these things up close enough. So one of the things in the future that astronomers would like to do is build telescopes that let us see all the way to the event horizon of black holes. And if we can do that, then we can actually watch matter get accelerated, get hot, produce energy, and then vanish across the event horizon. And if we can see that, we'll learn a tremendous amount about the physics of black holes.
In your book, you mentioned the possibility that black holes were related to the possibility of time travel and also alternative realities. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, this gets into all sorts of interesting terrain. So, you know, time is a flexible quantity. This is what Einstein realized with his theory of relativity. So, for example, if something's falling towards a black hole and we're watching it from a safe distance, we'll see time appear to slow down for that object. Now, for the object itself, everything is normal. In fact, you kind of look out in the universe and you see time speed up. So, in principle, there are tricks that could be played with time travel and so on. Then people get interested in questions of, you know, if you fall into a black hole, where do you go? This comes back to what's going on in the middle. And the interesting thing is Einstein's mathematical framework for gravity, for general relativity, there are certain solutions, mathematical solutions to what happens inside a black hole that allow for things like wormholes, tunnels, strange distortions of space that take you in one place and put you out somewhere else or somewhen else. Now, we don't know if that can really happen. It may be that those situations are very unstable. But one possibility is that you end up in a different universe. You end up in some alternate reality if you go through one of these places. So that, I think, is where the connection comes in between black holes and other universes.
Would you review for us how the cosmos has evolved or changed over time?
So the cosmos has undergone some pretty radical changes. And again, it's interesting because our human perspective gets in the way sometimes. You know, some people would say that the universe we live in and the universe of the last 13.7 billion years is actually the least important part of its history. It's kind of cold, it's dead. And in fact, the really interesting stuff happened in the first 3 minutes after the Big Bang, in which case the universe was very, very different. It wasn't full of structures like stars and galaxies and planets. It was just this smooth mess of subatomic particles and radiation. But all sorts of stuff was happening during that period. But that, to us, was about 3 minutes long. Some people would say that was the most interesting time in the universe's history. Everything else has been dull and boring since then because the universe has expanded and cooled down. And so what's happened is that early soup of particles and radiation has thinned out. And so by now, we're at a point where everything is cooling off. It's really the spent embers of this early episode. And, you know, the interesting thing is it's not even going to stay this way for that long. If you could wait around for another few trillion years, the universe would actually sort of fade out of view. And this is something we've realized relatively recently. The expanding universe, it seems to be expanding faster and faster. And this is due to a thing called dark energy. And this means eventually we won't even be able to see other galaxies. We'll just be an isolated patch in the middle of a complete void. So the evolution of the universe is kind of interesting. And we do live in an interesting moment in that evolution.
What do you hope your book will accomplish?
The greatest hope I have is that it informs people who don't have time otherwise to look into this and who are interested, but also perhaps inspires a few people out there to spend more time thinking about the universe around them, and certainly to encourage their children to have a scientific outlook. They don't have to be scientists, but scientific outlook is all about analysis. It's all about curiosity. So if I can do anything to stimulate curiosity, that would be an aim I would like to see happen.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think very simple. Look up at the sky and with fascination and wonder and always ask questions.
Well, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
You have just been listening to Caleb Scharf, author of the book Gravity's Engines, How Bubble-Blowing Black Holes Rule Galaxies, Stars, and Life in the Universe, published in 2012 by Scientific American and Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and KEXP.org.